What did our founding fathers think when it comes to virtue and morality? Well, John Adams said our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other. Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now we're going to talk again with Bill Federer, best-selling author and speaker. And Bill is quite knowledgeable about the founders and what they had to say, especially about God and country. In fact, Bill's classic book is called America's God and Country. His website is AmericanMinute.com. Bill, welcome back to the program.
Jerry, great to be with you.
Okay, so what I really want to focus on, just for a few minutes, is the idea of, from the founders themselves, the more internal restraint we have, the less outward government we need. The less internal restraint, then the more outward government. And I said we'll focus on the founders, but we can go beyond that because there's that classic quote from Robert Winthrop about the Bible or the bayonet. But first, let's start with, what do you think about that concept of internal versus external restraint?
Well, that is the attitude that ancient Israel had. And so I wrote a book called Rise of the Tyrant, and I bring out how the most common form of government in all of world history is kings, pharaohs, Caesar, Kaiser, Sultan, Tsar. And if you're friends with the king, you're more equal. You're not friends with the king, you're less equal. You're an enemy of the king, you're dead or you're a slave. And so it's very hierarchical. America's founders finally broke away from the most powerful king the world had ever seen, the King of England. And it was a top-down government. Very similar to France with Louis XIV, the Sun King. He said, I am the state. And he said, it is the law because I wish it to be. So all the law was the king's will codified. But our founders didn't like the king. And they realized that they wanted it to be a government from the bottom up, not forced from the top down. But for the people to be the king, the people need to have morals and virtues. And Montesquieu brought this up in 1748, his Spirit of the Laws. He divided governments into three. He says the republics, monarchs, despots. Republic is where the people are king, ruling through their representatives, and this is dependent upon the people having virtue. And this is most prevalent in the Protestant countries of Northern Europe. He says monarchs are like a king with a conscience, and they're limited by parliaments and barons and so forth, and they rule by honor and dishonor. And he says this is most prevalent in the Catholic countries of Southern Europe. The religions which have a visible head are more likely to prefer governments with a visible head. What does he mean by, he said, virtue is nice to have in a monarchy, but it's not necessary. People will do what the king says, whether or not it fits in with some internal moral. And if the king honors them and they have done something unscrupulous, then everybody will feel free to do a little borderline unscrupulous stuff. But then he says despots. Despots are kings with no strings attached. They're kings without consciences. They're kings that rule by their whims and caprices. And he says that their motivating force is fear, and this is most prevalent in the Muslim countries of the Ottoman Empire. And so you have sort of almost a spirit, mind, and body, right? So virtue is you're punished or rewarded in the next life. Monarchs, honor and shame is sort of a temporal type of thing. And then the despots rule through fear and pleasure, right? You do what they say, you get a harem and some women. You don't do what they say, you get your head chopped off. So it's very physical. And our founders in America wanted to set up a republic, and so they realized it was dependent upon the people having virtue. And we go back in history, and we see that when Israel came out of Egypt around 1400 BC, they literally were the first instance in world history of a nation being ruled without a king. And it was all dependent upon the people having these internal laws and being motivated to follow them. So it's a spectrum of power. One side's total government, the other side's no government. Total government, you get a king, and no government is anarchy, unless the people have these internal morals. But question, what would motivate you to follow an internal moral? What would cause you to deny a selfish tendency?
Accountability to God.
Correct. Israel introduced this concept that there's God watching everyone. He wants you to be fair, and he's going to hold you accountable in the future.
If I could just interrupt you for a second. When you look at even the Ten Commandments, a lot of those things can be outwardly monitored. Thou shalt not kill or do murder. Thou shalt not steal. But the one about thou shalt not covet, this shows you the divine origin of the Ten Commandments. Only God could know whether or not somebody's obeying or disobeying that command.
That's a very good point. And so if everybody in the country believes God is watching, he wants me to be fair, he will hold me accountable, everybody is motivated to follow these internal morals, and you can have complete order in society with no policemen following everybody around. And it's brilliant. Now, it only works with a God of the Bible. An Islamic Allah God says there's an infidel woman there, you can rape her, it's okay. Only the God of the Bible says do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Ronald Reagan put it this way: without God, there is no virtue because there is no prompting of the conscience. William Lynn, the first chaplain of the U.S. House, said, let my neighbor once persuade himself that there is no God, and he will soon pick my pocket and break not only my leg, but my neck. If there be no God, there is no law, no future account. Government, then, is the ordinance of man only, and we cannot be subject to it for conscience sake. Here's Democrat Party candidate for president William Jennings Bryan, stated in 1913. A religion which teaches personal responsibility to God gives strength to morality. There is a powerful restraining influence in the belief that an all-seeing eye scrutinizes every thought and word and act of the individual. I love the quote from John Adams, and he said that if it was once revealed or demonstrated that there is no future state, my advice to every man, woman, and child would be to take opium. For I'm certain there is nothing in this world worth living for but hope, and every hope will fail us if the last hope, that of a future state, is extinguished.
Wow.
So it's this idea that the founders had, in all of their thinking, they had this thought that we're going to be held accountable to God. Even Ben Franklin, here he writes to Yale president Ezra Stiles. He says, the soul of man is immortal and will be treated with justice in another life, respecting its conduct in this.
Wow.
Franklin writes, there is one God, Father of the universe. He loves such of his creatures as love and do good to others, and will reward them either in this world or hereafter. That men's minds do not die with their bodies, but are made more happy or miserable after this life, according to their actions. This pervaded all of the founders' concept of thinking. Matter of fact, it made its way into the state constitutions. Here's the Pennsylvania state constitution. And it was signed by Ben Franklin. It says, each member of the legislature shall declare, I do believe in one God, a creator and governor of the universe, the rewarder of the good, the punisher of the wicked. And then the Supreme Court in Pennsylvania stated in 1817, laws cannot be administered unless the people are taught to revere the sanctity of an oath and look to a future state of rewards and punishments for the deeds done in this life. And other states, for example, here's South Carolina's 1790 Constitution, said all persons who acknowledge that there is one God in a future state of rewards and punishments, and that God is publicly to be worshipped, shall be freely tolerated. Mississippi's 1817 Constitution, no person who denies the being of God or a future state of rewards and punishments shall hold any office in the civil department within this state. Maryland.
Okay, I'm sure you could go on and on, and this is an excellent point, but and all these things, by the way, can be found in your book, America's God and Country, plus that other one, the original 13, but here's the underscore, here's the point that needs to be made, is that they believed, they being the founders of America and the founders of these different states, they believed that if we believe in divine accountability, that would absolutely impact our behavior, and that it wasn't up to the government. You know, you can't hire enough police to deal with a society that totally breaks down in terms of chaos and everybody does that which is right in their own eyes. There's just not enough, you know, that society can do. So I want you to comment on the internal versus external, and that old classic quote about the Bible or the bayonet, which many people learned about through your book. But you know what I'm talking about. Robert Winthrop's quote, the Speaker of the House in the mid-19th century. Tell us about that.
He said men must be controlled either by a power within them or a power without them, either by the word of God or the strong arm of man, either by the Bible or the bayonet. You know, I read a Washington Post article earlier this year. It says this: mass surveillance silences minority opinions, according to study. A new study shows that knowledge of government surveillance causes people to self-censor their dissenting opinions online. And so this is a substitute for God. If they believe, hey, there's this power watching me, and it has this agenda, and it's going to hold me accountable in the future, maybe I'll voluntarily fit in with this agenda. It's a substitute for God, right? Lucifer said, I will be like the Most High. But it was this concept the founder said, that God is watching. He wants us to be fair, and he's going to hold us accountable. Now, we see that Israel, as long as the priests taught this, that there are these internal laws, and there's a God because you're accountable to, Israel's system worked. But when they stopped teaching the law, every man did what was right in their own eyes, the rubber band snaps back, and they get King Saul, and the people lose their freedoms. Another interesting thing the founders looked to was Athens, the Athenian democracy, and someone who lived during that time was named Plato.
Okay, now we have three or four minutes left. Go ahead.
Plato says that the city government in Athens would go through five stages. The first stage he called rule of the capable. These are people of principle, and they do a good job, and the city grows. The second group wants to get involved in politics. Plato called them lovers of fame and honor. These are people that have no experience running anything. They just got famous. Maybe they were a Greek actor that everybody liked, or a Greek Olympic athlete, or maybe a Hollywood action figure that gets elected governor of California. You think, what did Arnold run before he became governor? Not even a village. He was just famous. And because they love fame, they hate being defamed, and these you can manipulate with public opinion. And then they end up yielding to the human tendency of avarice, selfishness, covetousness. We all have that, selfish. And so they vote a little money out of the treasury to pad their retirement, little money to their friends. Before you know it, it turns into a third category called an oligarchy, a rule of few, an insider clique. If you're their friends, you get the waivers and the favorable treatment. If not, you got to get audited and pay these taxes. And Plato says that eventually the people throw the bums out and set up a democracy. He says at first the democracy is the most charming form of government. Its chief characteristic is tolerance. They tolerate everyone, and then they begin to tolerate people that are a little bit off. Till finally they tolerate people that are a lot off. Till finally they're tolerating crooks and criminals and crime, and everybody just tolerates it. And then he says that the young man gives into libertinism and useless and unnecessary pleasures, even incest and unnatural union. That's right. That's what he's talking about. And that behavior that was mentioned in the last part of the Israel Republic, where the sodomites are banging on the doors and the concubines are being raped. And so Plato says that the manner of Democrats is that every man does what is right in their own eyes. And by Democrats, he's describing the democracy. And that's the same thing that happened to Israel. When Israel, the people stopped following the law, that everyone did what was right in their own eyes. And so Plato says it turns into chaos. And then people start robbing and stealing, and then they say, can't someone come in and fix this mess? And that's the fifth stage. Someone comes in promising to fix it. They're all smiles, and the people yield to this person their rights, their freedoms, and then he gets too powerful, and they cast it in his teeth. And he has the choice of giving up the power, which he's not inclined to do because Plato called him a lover of power, or get rid of the people confronting him. And so he purges his administration of anybody with virtue and frees the convicts and the criminals and the slaves and arms them, and they become his mob to punish anybody that disagrees with him. Then he uses the power of the state to falsely accuse and kill anybody that disagrees with him. Finally, he stands in the chariot of state holding the reins of power, and he's revealed as the tyrant. So this democracy in Athens is a temporary form of government that only works as long as the people have virtue. When they give up their virtue and they give into their passions and lusts, and the last stage of this in society is the lack of sexual restraint, then the whole thing begins to crater. And then they begin to say, can't someone come along and fix it? And that's when a dictator takes over. In Israel's case, it was King Saul. Remember, they went to Samuel the prophet. They said, we want to be like the other countries. And Samuel cries, and the Lord said, they did not reject you. They rejected me.
Yeah, in 1 Samuel 8, you see lots of things that are going to happen to Israel and that did happen to Israel involving oppression because of the king's power. Bill, thank you so much for being with us. Bill Federer, AmericanMinute.com. How about a 20-second closing thought on internal versus external restraints?
When King Saul turns to his men and says, kill all those Levite priests, and they hesitate, then he turns to Doeg the Edomite, and he says, sure, I'll kill him, and he does. What just happened there? Doeg surrendered his conscience to King Saul. When you lose your individual accountability to God, you do whatever the state says. You have no more conscience. If the state says this certain behavior is now acceptable, then, oh, fine, whatever the state says. I love the quote from John Leland, the Baptist leader there in Connecticut. He says, if the government can stand in your stead on the day of judgment, fine, believe in whatever the government tells you to. But if the government's not going to be there on the day of judgment, you're accountable to God for your own conscience.
Right.
Right there is the attitude our founders had, that we each are individually accountable to God, and so we want to fit in and follow his morals, and that way we can have order in society with no policemen. It's a brilliant system, and as we get rid of this God, we're going to end up having more crime and then having more government and ultimately back to a dictator.
Bill Federer, AmericanMinute.com. Thanks so much for being with us, Bill. God bless you.
Thank you, Jerry.
All right, bye-bye.